Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast. So, are you ready, by the way?
Yeah. Do we know what we're talking about?
Yeah, so I have no notes for you. I don't even have my freaking internet's messing up right now, so I don't even have your bio pulled up. So let's just wing it. Let's just talk. I have full confidence that we'll put together a good conversation without any.
Yeah, I was gonna say, let's make this. I hope it's more of a conversation than a.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Kevin Devitt. Kevin was most recently on staff at UAB before they got let go just a few weeks ago. And Kevin and I have a really open, honest, and real conversation about the realities of getting fired and what happens next, and how do you find the next gig, and how do you handle that situation. I think it's a really important conversation to have, and one that people don't talk about a whole lot. But if you coach long enough, you're gonna get fired at some point. And so that's why I think it's so important to put this stuff out there, have these open dialogues, so that when someone does go through it, you know, they know they're not the only ones, and everyone's been through it at some point, and maybe they've got a resource to listen to now. So I really appreciate Kevin's willingness to do this and have this conversation. He certainly was reluctant at times, and I appreciate him letting me push the envelope a little bit. But I hope you guys enjoy, and please follow along with what we're doing at our website, risingcoaches.com. Okay, before we jump into today's podcast, I want to talk to you briefly about the Rising Coaches membership. You know, so many people ask, what is it? What do you get? Will this help me get a job? That's the million-dollar question. A lot of times people hit us up when they need job advice and asking for help. And look, we're happy to give advice and help anytime we can, whether you're a member or not. And we can't guarantee that signing up for a membership is going to get you a job. We don't want to get into that. But what we can guarantee is if you do sign up, there's some tremendous content on our member site, and we are constantly bringing in new coaches and guests to speak to our group. So we really feel strongly that it'll help you with your development. If you want to meet coaches in the profession from all different levels, which I always strongly advise, you never know who can help you in this business, both personally and professionally. I can guarantee you'll have a lot of opportunities to create genuine relationships with those people and different coaches that you would have never met otherwise. And if you want to be a part of a community of coaches that's there to bounce ideas off of, help you, support you, then please, I think Rising Coaches is something that you'd be interested in. So if you think that this is something that you can benefit from, check out our website, risingcoaches.com/membership. It's only $120 a year, which is $10 a month to be a part of it. That's an annual fee, and we hope you'll consider being a part of our community of now over 500 coaches, which is awesome, in just 5 months of having the membership program open. So grateful for everyone that's a part of it, and we hope that you will consider joining. All right, well, let's just jump right into it. Like, you got fired, what, 2 weeks ago?
I think less than 2 weeks ago. We got fired last Friday, so it's been 10 days.
10 days. 10 days. All right. And this is not your first. This is not your first time getting fired. So you've been through it before, which probably helps, right?
Yes. Except, you know, that when I got fired, we were at Wright State, and it was very similar, but we had won 22 games, and you know, this year we won 19, so I guess it was still two very successful seasons. But, you know, I think I was at Wright State for a year. And I was really I was there for about 6 months, to be honest. And UAB, I had been in some capacity here for 7 out of the past 8 years. So I think it hit home a little bit more with this one just because, you know, the longevity of being here and the relationships built.
And we were laughing at the beginning because we've talked on the phone like several times since this all happened. But it's obviously not like a funny deal. And, you know, it's super stressful. So, and everyone that coaches is going to go through it at some point if they haven't already. And so hopefully this conversation will like help some other people deal with it, because you are going to have to deal with this whether you think you're going to or not. If you choose to coach, like at some point you're going to get fired. And like you said, just to give a little context, you were at Wright State with Billy Donlin, and you guys won 22 games, had a great season. Did you make it to the conference championship game in the tournament, maybe?
Yeah, we did.
In close game, right?
We won three straight. Yeah, we lost to Green Bay. I don't know what the final score was, but the setup of the Horizon League tournament was the top two seeds had byes, the semis, and we finished in a tie for second, but the tiebreaker pushed us to third. So we had to win three games to get to the title game, and it was the first year of the format. So we didn't feel great about the situation we were in, but, you know, it is what it is.
But, yeah, I mean, still to have that amount of success, 22 wins, and come, you know, minutes away. I don't know how much you lost by to Green Bay, but, you know, I think I remember it being a close game, and you guys getting let go after that. And then here at UAB, I think you guys averaged, you know, you were there how many years? Four? Was Coach Eason there? Four
years?
And you guys averaged pretty close to 20 wins a year, if not 20 wins a year. Had a lot of success, had some really, really good players. So it's not like, you know, when I got let go at Mississippi State, yeah, we only got 3 years, but like, you know, our record was not good. And like, it was not, as hard as it was not a complete shock that we got let go, just because of, you know, it's an SEC program. I don't know that we had ever won more than 14 games in our 3 years there. So you could see it, but your two deals are a little bit different. But what's like the first emotion reaction when you get the news, whether you're expecting it or not?
You know, I think I was driving into work in the morning it happened. See, we had played in the conference tournament, and I think the times right now made it a lot more difficult, because, you know, we won our first round game in the conference USA tournament, and that put us to 19, and we're going to play West Kentucky in the quarterfinal round. So that's when, you know, pretty much college basketball, you know, went down with the coronavirus. And so we were having a team meeting with our guys, going over the scout. They left the room, and literally immediately as they left, we got a phone call saying, you know, the conference tournament had been canceled. So that night we got back on the plane and got back into Birmingham pretty late. So we had a team meeting, you know, discussed moving forward academics, you know, kind of the schedule. We didn't know how serious the coronavirus was going to be, obviously. So the next day I was coming into the office, and, you know, that's probably around 11 o'clock. I was with my wife doing some things, and, you know, there was a text from our director of ops saying, you know, we have to meet, you know, ASAP. And, you know, that's when Coach Eason broke the news to everybody. We found out simultaneously as the players did. So it was kind of a shock, definitely. We had no clue. You know, our athletic director was in our locker room celebrating with the team after our first round game. You know, as far as we were concerned, he was in support of us. And, you know, things happened, and, you know, it was an awkward time to find out. And I don't think it really caught our players off guard. So, you know, it's part of the business, and it's something that everyone will go through. You know, some guys are going to come out, you know, with great records. You know, we were 19 games above 500, and others are going to be in a situation where you were, where there wasn't so much success. But, you know, all of these in general, you know, you can grow and learn and get better from each situation. So I'm going to take it and, you know, move forward. And it was a great, you know, 4 years, learned a ton. I think our program grew. Coach Eason's, you know, he's one of the best people in college basketball. So regardless of our win or loss record, he's a, you know, man of integrity, and he did things the right way. I think we treated our players the right way. and I was fortunate to be able to, you know, be along for the ride. So,
yeah, Kevin, you told me you sent out a text to your staff after you guys received word at UAB that you had been let go about the, what is it, the five stages of grieving. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you do go through that process, right?
You definitely do. You know, I think it's nothing, you know, a death in one's family or someone that's close to you. You know, it's comparable. I you know, getting fired is not death. Let's not, you know, get that twisted. But, you know, you go through a couple stages of, you know, you're angry, you're sad, you're in denial, a lot of different emotions. And I think everybody deals with it differently. And I think the time frame of how you get over it, you know, sometimes, you know, you want to get over things rather quickly, and other times, you know, there's, you know, reflection. You know, you got to sit and you got to reflect, you got to take ownership. But I think in a time like this, the quicker that you can get over the hump as far as your emotions are concerned and getting into a positive light, I think that's best, because, you know, you have to go out and get another job, and you have to learn from the experience and kind of sell yourself moving forward in a positive light. So I think your mental fortitude is really tested, and your perseverance as far as, you know, why am I coaching? You know, your why becomes more apparent. And you kind of, in that reflection, in that moment of reflection, you realize, you know, what you value and what's important to you as a coach.
So, and I want to talk about that, what you just talked about, like having to go get another job and being able to rebound quickly. But before we do that, talk about like good text etiquette when a buddy of yours or even an acquaintance of yours gets let go. You know, of course you get let go, your phone probably starts blowing up. Like, what text messages do you like to see, or do you like to see any text? Just shows that people are thinking about you. Should people give it a couple of days? Is there a text that you're like, man, get out of here with this? Like, talk to me about that so people know what to do in those situations on the other end.
Yeah, I think anytime anyone reaches out in any form or fashion is great. You know, a lot of people, you know, just, hey, I'm thinking about you, or, you know, here for you. You know, anything is well received. I mean, there's really, at the end of the day, you know, the expression, there's no words, obviously, you know, there's no words, you know, for this. And, you know, it affects a lot of different people, you know, your wife, some people have kids, you know, luckily it's just me and my wife, we don't have kids yet. But other, you know, other coaches on our staff have kids, our head coach had kids. So I think just the, when you choose to take a job in the public, you know, in the public eye, so to speak, with college basketball, everything's everything's out there, you know, especially just coaching in general. Okay, it doesn't have to be college. The second that you decide to take a job where you can be criticized, you have to, you know, you have to get over the fact that it's not going to be, you know, how you want it all the time. And you have to be able to take tough criticism and so to speak, and that's part of the deal. So I think when you get fired, just knowing that people care about you as a person, first and foremost is probably the best thing. You know, I think once you get fired and you lose your identity of, you know, who you are, you're a basketball coach. Once that's taken away from you, I think you have to look to see, you know, who you are as a person, who you are as a family man, what you bring to the table as far as there's more to me than basketball. So I think that's really the hardest test for most coaches when they do get fired, because me, I don't know about everybody else, but my life fully revolves around this. So, you know, when it doesn't go well, you know, it's going to affect a lot. My wife always tells me, you know, you have to find other hobbies. I don't have other hobbies. You know, I don't watch Netflix. I don't go golfing. Right. I just watch film. I recruit. So when you lose the one thing that is who you are, I think it really tests, like I said, your fortitude, your perseverance to see, you know, can you overcome this? So long story short, anything anyone says in a positive light regarding you as a person and just caring and more about you than, you know, the wins and losses is important.
So don't hesitate. And, you know, if you're on the other end and you know someone that got let go, send that text. Don't feel awkward. Like they're going through a hard time. Hit send.
Hit send. No doubt. Hit send. 10 times over.
How is this time around? I know you said it hit a little harder here than it did at Wright State, but in terms of, well, let me back up. Tell me about the first, like 24 hours. Like, what are you doing in the first 24 hours, 48 hours, you know, a week, 10 days? You know, what are you doing now? I know, like, from my experience, when I got let go, you know, like, I felt like I needed to be doing stuff, but I didn't know exactly what to do. And I feel like there's two ways you can go. There's like, you know, like embarrassment and like ashamed. And so you want to go into like isolation. And then there's like the opposite, which is like, I need to call everybody that is in my phone book and just touch base and let them know like, hey, I'm out there. I'm looking. Have you heard of anything? Do you know of any jobs? And for me, I kind of felt both at the same time. So it was hard balancing that, but like, what did you kind of, what's been your go-to the first 24 hours, 48 hours, and like beyond?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the isolation or just kind of being, you know, ashamed or just, you know, putting your head down, so to speak. I think that moment that it, you know, hit Twitter and it became kind of official to the world, that's kind of, you know, where you put your head down for a minute and you kind of are kind of, you know, hit your lowest point. I think after that, after the initial shock of everything, it was, okay, think about what to do next. Think about who I need to call, think about recruits, think about, well, obviously your current team, you know, then recruits, and then, you know, think about just in general what you need to do to, you know, tie the loose ends of this situation and go through that grieving process that we kind of talked about, but really as soon as you can pick up the pieces and look forward to what's next, and then try to move as fastly, you know, move as quickly as you can in that direction. And so I think that's a big thing. And but really just putting closure to the situation, you know, cleaning out your office, that's kind of one that hits home really hard. You know, once you do that, you know, hey, it's time to move on. You know, it's hard. So
yeah, no doubt. That makes it real when you're walking out.
Yeah, it does.
And that place that you go to every day is like no longer yours.
No question.
So are you, when you're like, did you do what I did, which is like go through your phone book and literally call every person in the coaching industry that you're like close with and just like what's the strategy to find the next job when you don't have one currently? Cause there's more urgency, obviously.
No question. I think really talking to the people that you really, that are close to you, that you kind of talk to on a maybe weekly to monthly basis, because ultimately whoever's really close in your circle of coaches those are usually the ones that are going to help you out and find the next job. It's awfully hard for, you know, people that don't know people on a personal level to get jobs. And, you know, I think your networking ability has to be, the foundation has to be laid prior to all of this for you to be successful coming out on the other end, because ultimately it's a lot about who you know, and kind of, you know, those people can vouch for you the best because they've worked with you. You've worked for, you know, the head coaches that you've worked under. Those guys can talk about you as someone on their staff who, you know, they can give you the best recommendation because they see firsthand what you do on a day to day.
Yeah. And I can just see the difference. Like I experienced this firsthand, but also I can see the difference in you going through it. I remember, we talked about this the other day. I remember seeing you at Wright State, even before you got let go, but you kind of knew it was coming. You were in full panic mode. And I talked to you the other day after the UAB situation, and obviously still some distress there and stuff, but I think you even said I'm surprised how many people I know in coaching, because people do reach out a lot. And is it been easier this time around in terms of that, like less panic and more like you kind of know you're going to land on your feet somewhere and you know it's going to work out? Obviously it's stressful, the unknown's stressful, but do you have that confidence at the back of your mind that you're going to be good?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first time I was younger, I didn't have nearly as much experience as I do now. So I think just getting older is part of, maturing and understanding how the business works. And the longer you're in it, there's experience is the greatest teacher. So I think this time around, just kind of having a little confidence in, what I've me personally, what I've accomplished as a coach and recruiter and things of that nature. I think at this point in time, it sells itself a little bit better than after, for instance, 4 years ago, 5 years ago at Wright State, to where that was my first year as an assistant coach. And so I didn't have as much backing. And so I think that the longer you're in it, the more people that you work under, the better off that you're probably going to be. Sometimes it's not the case, but also having the peace of mind knowing, you know what, I am good at what I do. I just need another opportunity, another chance. And like I said, kind of prior, it's all about growth and just knowing hey, I've grown exponentially from what I was last year to, 5 years ago to, when I first got in business. I'm a different person, and a different coach, a better coach, better all around at everything I do the longer I do this. So I think that helps, your peace of mind knowing that once you do get the next opportunity or once someone does say yes to you, you're going to give them everything that you have, and you're going to take those experiences that you just had, you're going to learn from them in a positive light. And kind of bring a better sense of urgency to the next program that you're with.
And now, a quick break to talk about our partners at Dr. Dish. As off-season approaches, it's the perfect time to upgrade your training equipment. At Rising Coaches, we highly recommend you to check out our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. They are undoubtedly the best and most innovative training machines. Their newest model for schools, the Dr. Dish CT, is a complete game changer. It has a touchscreen that plays training videos, tracks stats by location, and incorporates on-demand workouts and drills from the top programs and trainers in the world. Check them out at drdishbasketball.com or on social media at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Mention Rising Coaches before you purchase and receive an additional $300 off your next order. And now, back to Kevin Devitt. All right, what advice would you give to someone that is just getting let go for the first time?
I would tell them not to panic. I would tell them to remain calm. I would tell them to, be in constant communication with the people that really care about you in the profession, because those people will always keep you upbeat. There's a couple guys that I consistently talk to that will always make me laugh, that will always give me some positive. Some days in these last 10 days, I mean, I've had moments where I feel so hopeful. I've had moments where I am, I'm not at my lowest point, but I'm not feeling anything's going to turn in my, favor. So really remaining in touch with those that care about you, is a huge deal, because they're always going to shed some positivity on the situation. They're going to keep you upbeat. And I think what I've learned in these couple days here is my wife's like, "What, Kev, it's been 5 days. Settle down. Where we're at right now is better than where we were 3 days ago. You've had more conversations with X amount of people about X amount of jobs." So the longer that you continue to kind of stay in the fight, just stay in the middle of the ring, as they say, is going to eventually break for you. So that persistence has to come through. And sometimes you need people to kind of stick with you through it. And so, you know, I appreciate that. And I think that that's the advice I'd give to those people is just to, you know, continue to remain in a circle that helps you stand straight, you know, because those people are going to be the ones that help you the most.
Man, I love that boxing analogy. Stay in the middle of the ring. That's really good. You know, the other things that I thought helped me were, like, take advantage and, like, enjoy the break. You know, right now is a little different. The coronavirus is forcing our entire industry to take a break. But usually, like, that's never happens in coaching. There's never, you know, a day off, especially the higher up the ladder you go. Like, it's just more and more work, and it's really hard to find that balance. And when you get let go, you know, you can either, like, drive yourself crazy and be on the phone 24/7, which some of that's required to get the next spot, but you also, like, do have some time to, like, hey, I can sleep in today, or hey, I can, you know, spend a little extra time with my family or do this for myself. I thought that helped me get over it a little faster so that I could go back to working, you know, 24/7 and find the next opportunity. The other thing is, like, you can take advantage of it from, again, like, coronavirus is screwing this all up in so many ways. But, like, it's an opportunity to get out and go see coaches in person, you know, visit other programs, you know, watch some workouts, go to, like, some NCAA tournament games and see people there. I think there's a lot of opportunity with the free time that you're only going to get so much. You're probably going to get another job soon, so you're only going to get so much free time. So, like, take advantage of it while you have it. You seem like the type that's on the phone 24/7 regardless. And I don't know, have you been able to take some time for yourself?
Yeah. I think you know, it's weird. It's like you said, the coronavirus is definitely, you know, my wife works, and obviously I was working. and now she's not at work because of it. And so we've been home, and all these days have run together. So I might have been wrong in counting the days prior and things like that, because literally Sunday, there's no difference between, you know, Sunday, Saturday, and Monday at this point in time. We haven't really, you know, left the house. I think you're right on everything that you said. If this was a normal scenario right now, I would probably be, you know, living in my car and just kind of crisscrossing the country. I think I'd be, you know, more, you know, feeling that I was working towards something. I'd be on the move. Instead, I'm just kind of pacing through my house, you know, from my bedroom to the kitchen, so to speak. And I think that's been a little bit tough, because I want to be more proactive. And I think what you mentioned is spot on. And so I want to feel like I'm working. So I'm definitely on the phone, and then spending time so much. It's hard, because you think, you know, there's something that can be done. And just like during the, you said it about me. I don't really have any other hobbies, so to speak. So, you know, my wife and I can watch a movie, or she could tell me to come outside and help her pick weeds from, you know, from our lawn, or take out the trash. And, you know, we sat down, we watched, you know, a movie together. But at the end of the day, she's, you know, I talked to someone today, actually prior, and he told me, whatever you do, make sure you take care of your wife, because she's the one that has to deal with all the, you know, pickup, and be the one that has to find a new job and sell the house. And she's been, you know, with me for 10 years, and she's a trooper. She's awesome. But just to, you know, seeing her every day, like, because she's not at work and I'm not at work, that's been great. You know, we could share some coffee in the morning, but I think at the most part here, she's probably annoyed with me just staying on the phone.
She's ready for you to get the heck out of the house again.
definitely. But yeah, I think I don't know if there's time to relax. Not when, not when the future is, you know, a little bit unknown, I have a hard time kind of sitting idle. So I have spent some time with her, of course, like you said, but at the same time, I wish that the coronavirus wasn't what it was. And I think I would be out in my car and kind of driving and making something happen. You know, that's more my personality. That's really who I am.
Yeah, no question. No question. Kevin, let's, I know we usually do this at the beginning of these calls, but I thought it was important to jump right into the good stuff. But tell us a little bit, let's go briefly into your background. Like, you're from Chicago. You didn't play at a high level or anything, like so many of us. So tell us how you, like, broke in and got your breaks, and even, like, as much as getting your first job on the road at Wright State.
Yeah, a lot of my background is really unique. I think my story is definitely it's probably in its own way a standalone, because I wasn't a player, I wasn't a manager. You know, I coached when I was a student at DePaul University. I started coaching high school basketball my sophomore year, and then I started my own website in Chicago to kind of cover recruiting. And then I started my own all-star game to basically, you know, I had a vision to get the top 30 players in the state of Illinois together. So if you weren't in the McDonald's or Jordan game, you kind of played in my all-star game, which is called the Chicago High School Classic. And I pitched it to Comcast TV in Chicago, and they liked the idea. So pretty much out of my dorm room, I was coaching high school basketball during the day, really going to school during the day, coaching high school basketball at night, running my website kind of simultaneously throughout. You know, there was no Twitter or Instagram back then. So we were in, you know, I think 2007 or 2008. You know, there was YouTube was just kind of starting. And so I took the website idea and I ran with it. Like I said, parlayed into this all-star game. I think I developed a really good reputation around the city. I was always kind of involved with whatever was going on in the basketball world, the high school scene, so to speak.
How old were you when you knew, like, was all this supposed to lead to a college coaching career, or were you just, like, passionate about the game? And
no, yeah, it was, I had a plan, I think, you know, when I was probably 20 years old, like 19, my sophomore year, I was like, I want to coach and I need to find a way in. And in the back of my head, I knew being from Chicago and being such a great city for basketball, that there's a lot of, you know, contacts to be made and people to be, you know, just to be, get out there in the community and people to know who you are. But I had to figure out how I could kind of basically just kind of put myself in the middle of it without having any, you know, former, you know, reason to be there, so to speak. So I kind of had to create. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, why didn't you go the manager route, like the traditional non-player route?
You know, it was a thought, but once again, that's not really who I am. I wanted to kind of be different, and I want to kind of, you know, blaze my own trail in a sense and kind of create my own path. And so I thought that was definitely, it was a possibility. But I felt like I needed the hands-on experience. I wanted to be on the floor. I wanted to coach my own team. So being able to do that, like at the freshman level was tremendous. You know, I thought that to me was like my own, it was like I was on, you know, Monday night, you know, on ESPN, the Big 12, you know, every game I coached was such a big deal at the time. And I think that's what really, you know, allowed my passion to come through. But I, you know, like I said, I was doing all these things while I was still a college student. So I felt like my resume, you know, at the time it was two avenues. I was thinking, well, once I get out of college and I had my education degree, so I was going to be a teacher. And by the time I got out of college, I felt like I'd have enough experience to where I could land a head varsity job, you know, because I had 3 years of under-level experience and then, you know, with all these other sidebar things that I was doing,
I felt like I would be a great candidate to be, you know, a young head coach at the age of, you know, 24 or 25 in the city of Chicago. That's why that was kind of avenue one, maybe, so to speak. And then avenue two was, if I can build these relationships over time in the city of Chicago, with, like I said, which is a big time basketball city, that if I ever was fortunate enough to get to the mid major division one level or the high major, which really, you know, UAB is, you know, right on the cusp, that I would be able to use these relationships that I built over the course of, you know, because by the time I got to be an assistant, my first job at Wright State, I think I was 28. So I'd been doing it for 6 or 7 years, and now I'm 33. So if you look at it, I had 10 years of knowing these people and making and building these relationships to where I felt like what I did and the people that I met, if I could just continue to maintain those contacts, that it would pay off for me once I got to this level. Because it's awfully hard to just, you know, pop into places and kind of, you can forge relationships rather quickly, but, you know, there's nothing like knowing someone for a long time and having actually interacted with them when you were younger, and then to see you grow. That's when they're definitely more apt to, you know, help you out, so to speak. And so there was one player we signed here, Tamel Pearson from Chicago. His AAU coach, I had known him for 10 years, and he ended up committing to UAB, and he had Oklahoma State, he had Washington State, you know, he had other high major programs that were after him. But ultimately, because of my decision 10 years prior to do what I did out of my dorm room, helped us land, you know, a big time recruit. And so that, you know, there was two ways to look at it. And I think I went the second route, you know, long story short. But, you know, I think I told you, you know, how I just did this, but in reality, there was so much in between, and how I got to the collegiate level was this, is after I graduated from college, I thought I was potentially going to get a GA opportunity. It kind of fell through, and I was to a point where I needed to get a full-time job. So I ended up getting a teaching job on the west side of Chicago. And I was a PE teacher, first through eighth grade on the west side of Chicago in an underperforming school. And they gave me the job like literally 3 days before class started. So I had been, long story short, I had been applying for teaching jobs all over. This was the only, you know, school that called me. And so I was fortunate enough to get the job. And so as I take you back, I was coaching high school still at the time. So I had just graduated, right? So I could no longer coach at the high school that I was, you know, coaching at, because the school that I was working at was about an hour commute. So my job, you know, to go there from teach class from, you know, 8 to 3 on a normal school day, the traffic would have been too much for me to continue to coach at Richards High School where I was. So in the meantime, I got a call from Joe Griffin, who's the head coach at Roosevelt University downtown Chicago. It's an NAI program that had been basically dormant for 20 years. So it was 2009 at the time, and the program stopped in 1989. So it was like a 20-year hiatus. And he called me and asked me if I would be interested in volunteering for him. And at the time, it was an easier commute for me. So I decided to jump in to the college game at the small college level, because it was kind of a test of, you know, myself to see if I was built for this or not, you know. And it wasn't a thing to where, you know, everything in my life was riding on it. So it was kind of like a safety net in a sense, because I still had a teaching job. So it was really interesting to work between the two. So when I got the job, I searched the internet to try to find like any Division I coach that had been in the NAI level. And I came across, you know, I was just, you know, on the internet days, man, just reading bios. And I run across Richie Riley, who was at Coastal Carolina at the time. And he had been at Pikeville, which was in Kentucky. It was an NAI program. And, you know, they're a different type of program than we had, because they had full scholarships. We didn't. We were operating on a different level. We were basically had a Division III model in the NAI. So we were kind of, we were kind of, you know, in a gunfight with knives. So we were at a major disadvantage. But I reached out to Richie. I wrote him a handwritten letter. he got back to me, and he ends up leaving Coastal Carolina, goes to Eastern Kentucky, and then he becomes part of Jared Hass's first staff at UAB. And lo and behold, they had an administrative assistant opening, and you know, we maintained that relationship over 3 years. He called me and he asked me if I'd be interested in coming, and there you have it. That's how I got into Division One, simply because of a handwritten note and one relationship. You know, I think people talk about networking and, you know, meeting as many people as you can. It's all good and well, but all it takes is one person and one real relationship and someone to really believe in you. And so, you know, Richie Riley, you know, is now the head coach of South Alabama. He was the one that ultimately, you know, gave me birth in Division One. And so it was, you know, I look back on it and, you know, I'm so grateful for, you know, everything that he did for me. And then obviously came to UAB, worked with great people, including Coach Eason, who then, you know, hired me after the Wright State, you know, firing. So it's kind of leads into full circle. And like I said, ultimately it's, you know, the people that you work with on a day to day, they see your grind, they see your, you know, they believe in you, and those are the people that can speak well for you. To kind of circle back to being fired, those are the same people that are going to, you know, hopefully help me push forward. So that's a long story short.
No, I love it. I love how, you know, your path to getting in, you recognize at a young age that, like, I'm going to have to start somewhere. I can either start as a manager, which that's one route, or I can start by being around players and getting my hands dirty right away. And it's going to be a high level for me because I'm new to it. And that kind of, I mean, eventually, if you're going to get hired as a coach, you got to be able to bring players to the table, right? And so, like, you started with a tremendous base. And I started as a manager and love that path, and I don't regret it. But, like, there's times where I'm like, man, I wish I would have started just coaching, just right away, around really good players, and I could always go back to that base. And I kind of got that with my JUCO experience, which I was super fortunate to get right out of college. But, you know, really a lot of, like, foresight on your part to do what you did at the high school level and do the website where you're, you know, like, I guess breaking down players and talent in Chicago and building those relationships. And so I know that's a really roundabout way to get to this question, but did those, like, Chicago relationships and your ties to that city, was that a big part of the reason you got the Wright State job and your first? Because, like, most people get their first assistant job at, like, a really low level. But, like, Wright State is, like, that was a pretty good program in the Horizon League.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, Coach Domlin's from Chicago. So, you know, that answers your question right there a little bit. But I didn't, you know, I didn't know Coach Domlin, but, you know, he's a Chicago legend, you know. And, you know, I think Wright State being about 5 hours from Chicago was a great, you know, avenue to have. But ultimately, it goes back to, you know, the one guy that did help me get in, Richie Riley. He was the same guy that helped me get that job. You know, so Richie had moved on from UAB, and he left and went to Clemson as an assistant. And that year that he left, we ended up, you know, going to the NCAA tournament. We had a great year. So that was when I was director of ops at UAB. We ended up, you know, going to the tournament. We beat Iowa State in the first round. It was we had a great year. And so Richie was, you know, at Clemson at the time. And so Brad Brunell, who was the head coach at Clemson, who we worked under, Brad coached Billy Donlin at UNC Wilmington. So there was that connection there. And ultimately, I was a younger candidate for the job, you know, and it kind of worked out that way. And I think it was a little bit of mix of us having success and then a little bit of, you know, Richie, you know, pushing from behind the scenes and that relationship. So, and then a little bit of Chicago. So I think all three kind of had a hand in it. And, you know, I was fortunate because Coach Donlin, he's an excellent, you know, defensively, I tell people all the time, he's one of the best. That's his calling card. And I learned so much from him. And, you know, I was just really, you know, grateful for that opportunity. So It all worked out, but you know, it goes back to the handwritten note, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then after your year at Wright State, you kind of touched on this, but then when you get let go, Coach Eason is the head coach at UAB, and so that's just coming right back to that UAB situation and someone that you worked with that gave you your next opportunity. And who knows where the next opportunity will come from, Kevin, but I'm really confident that it'll come sooner rather than later, and your trajectory will continue on the upward path that that it's been on.
No, I hope so too. And you know, I appreciate, you know, our friendship, our relationship. I mean, you've done a heck of a job in helping coaches grow. And I think 10 years ago or however long it was, I was at the first or second Rising Coaches clinic in Vegas. I think at that point in time, there was, it was maybe 40 people in the crowd, and now it's grown so much over time. And just to see how much you've taken and just really made an impact on the college basketball world has been remarkable. And I think your vision and pushing forward and developing new things and being innovative is great to watch. And I'm happy for you. And you know, you just being a tremendous, you know, person, I couldn't be more, you know, thrilled for you just as a friend. So I appreciate this opportunity, and, you know, I wish you obviously the best of luck, even though, you know, me and you are on a, you know, talking basis, so to speak, but, it's been fun to watch from afar.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words, Kevin. What is, you know, and you were one of the first guys, like you mentioned, to get Rising Coaches going, and I don't ever like to take credit for the organization, because it really has been the collective effort of like so many people, and that's what makes it unique to me and so special to me, is like there's so many people that take ownership in Rising Coaches and its, you know, growth and birth and growth. What has like the organization meant to you, and you know, what has your experience been like with Rising Coaches?
You know, I mean, just going to that first clinic in Vegas, you know, I don't know how many, I think I've been to some Nike championship production clinics that were more so on the court. I think that clinic was a different way to connect with people as far as the social gatherings, and then, you know, the setting to where it's funny, actually, now that you speak of it, Ryan Marks was one of the presenters at that clinic, and he was the head coach at Texas Pan American at the time. And I said a couple words to him, you know, afterwards, and he's from Chicago. And it's funny now, you know, Ryan Marks is a very, very close friend of mine, you know, 10 years later. And so just something like that is huge. Just that, the relationships, being able to, you know, rub elbows with people, to be able to be in a place to where everybody's kind of treated equally, so to speak, to where I don't think people are being, you know, judged. People just all want to be there for the right reasons, to be able to learn, to grow. And so I think it's been a huge, huge deal. And, you know, at the time, I was an assistant at Roosevelt. I was an NAI assistant at the time. So for you guys to be able to allow me, you know, entry into this big thing that was supposedly, you know, for Division I people, that was everything to me. Just to be able to be included in it, I felt really good about it. And ultimately, I think that experience has helped me in more ways than one. So I think it's affected a lot of people other than myself, but it's been great.
No, I appreciate you sharing that, Kevin. And I really appreciate you sharing everything you shared with us today. I know it's, you know, not the easiest topic to talk about, but I do think it's important. And I, like I said, at the jump, like everyone's going to go through it. So, and there's not too much out there, I don't think, in terms of resources to help people deal with it and guide them through it. So I appreciate you being so willing to share that experience, and hopefully it helps some people. Thanks so much for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Just a quick reminder, please write us a review and subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends. And please check out our membership if it's something you think could help you. We don't guarantee that we help people get jobs, but we can guarantee that there's some tremendous content on our site that hopefully can help you in your development, and definitely can guarantee that you'll have opportunities to connect with and build meaningful relationships with coaches from all different levels at all different stages of their careers. So if you think that's something that can benefit you, check out our website, risingcoaches.com/membership, and sign up today.
just end the conversation. I'm done.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
All right, cool. No, that was
just
great, man.
Just ended on whatever you said.